This is Digital Story Podcast number 1044, March 24th, 2026. Today's theme is Just When You Think You Have It Dialed In. I'm Derek Story. There I stood on a mountain ridge that I had climbed. I had the Lumix around my neck and the OM system in my hand with a beautiful, detailed scene before me. This was the perfect setting to determine once and for all which camera rendered the best wide-angle detail. And then, disappointment. Find out what happened on this week's TVS Photography Podcast, plus all sorts of camera industry news. I hope you enjoy the show. So I spent last week, the better part of last week, camping, which, as you know, is one of my favorite things to do. Not only do I get to use and test camping gear, but I get to also use and test photography gear. And one of the things that I wanted to do, as you know, if you've been listening over the last couple months, is that I have been talking about cameras with smaller sensors, and I wanted to really get dialed in on which camera is best for what. Now, a big part of this is because coming up in June, I have a big workshop along with Rob Knight in Costa Rica, and I'm weighing, you know, which assortment of gear am I going to bring for that trip? I don't want to travel too heavy, but I definitely want to have everything I need, right? The photographer's dilemma, How do I balance weight and bulk against nimblosity and having fun, right? Because no one wants to be a pack horse on their vacation or workshop. Thinking, okay, I want to test the OM system TG7, which has performed really well for me, especially at the wider angles at 25 millimeter, 35 millimeter, 50 millimeter, that sort of thing, against the Panasonic FZ300, which I've had very good luck with at longer telephoto lengths, but have had some questions about at the wider end. And I was going, is it me? Is it the camera? Why don't these shots look like what I want them to look like? And I'm talking about the wide end. At 600 millimeters and 400 millimeters, I've been having a great time with the FZ300. It's been fantastic. But I was beginning to think, well, maybe it's calibrated more for that kind of photography. And the 25 millimeter end of the zoom, well, if you have to make a compromise somewhere, maybe that's where they made it. Wondering this is in the back of my mind, but I need to know this before I go on important trips later this summer. Camping is so fantastic for this because, you know, I'm out in simulated conditions for a lot of what I'm going to be doing, and I have the luxury of time. I'm not having to think about itineraries and, you know, all that kind of stuff. And I can really kind of dig in on this. So what I did for this morning hike is that I packed the FZ300 and the TG7 both, and I was going to do some comparisons at the wide angle. And I was thinking, okay, this will be great. And plus, talk about being light, only taking those two cameras. I had to climb a pretty hefty ridge to get the view that I want. And the view that I wanted had all sorts of interesting things. There was a river beneath, a nice valley, lots of trees, a variety of trees. I had a nice sky, you know, all the stuff that you kind of want for really sort of picking out the details in a landscape shot. Had my filters with me, all the good stuff. So I do my hike and I get up to the ridge and it was just fantastic. It was so beautiful. And first I pull out the FZ300 because I had it around my neck on a neck strap. And so I'm taking just wide shots with it. I'm not zooming out to even 400 with it, you know, let alone 600. I had done a lot of that back down in the valley where I was camping and got some great bird shots. In fact, I have some portraits of Steller's Jay that are like my favorite Steller's Jay portraits ever that I got at 400, 500, 600 millimeters with the FZ300. So I was already cooking with it on the long end. Again, my question was at the wide angle. So I pull it out and I do the wide angle shot. It looked fine. Everything looks good on a small LCD, right? Yeah, that looks great. Great shot. Well, we'll see. We'll see about that later. Then I pulled out the TG7 and I got it, you know, the wristband around my wrist because I was on a ridge. Didn't want to do anything stupid. And I pressed the power button and nothing happens. And I'm going, what? You know, this was like a what for a couple reasons. First of all, almost always before I take off on any trip, I make sure that the batteries in the cameras are fresh because I don't want to have this happen. I don't want to have a moment happen and have a dead battery in there because, you know, left over from the last shoot or whatever. So I was surprised by the fact that the battery seemed to be dead and the camera wouldn't even fire up. But I did have a fresh battery with me. Okay, no problem, no stress, no itinerary. It's a beautiful day. I'll go ahead, just change the batteries, and I'll figure out what I did wrong later with the battery that was dead. So I pull out the dead battery. I'm up there. I got my sunglasses on. I'm not even putting on reading glasses or anything because I know how to do this. I could do this blindfolded practically. So I put the new battery in. Close it all up. And of course, it's a multi-stage process with these waterproof cameras. Get it all closed up. Okay, I'm ready to do the same shot now. And I didn't want too much time to pass because I wanted the lighting conditions to be similar. Press the on button. Nothing happens. And I knew that was a fresh battery that I put in there, right? I was 99% sure that that was a fresh battery that I put in there. So I'm going, what the heck? I opened up the bottom, make sure I, you know, closed that properly. The battery was seated, had the little hook thing on it, and the thing would not fire up. Now I'm going, oh no, darn. So then what starts playing in my head, right, is this conversation that I had with Rob, and I think it was before one of our workshops or webinars or something. I think it was how to get the most out of your upcoming workshop sort of thing. And I was talking about the TG7 and how much I liked it and how I was thinking about bringing it on some of these workshops. People were saying, yeah, and I've got a TG6. I really like it. You know, there's all that. And Rob goes, yeah, I had like, and I forget what he had, is a 5, TG5 or TG6, somewhere in there. He goes, I loved it. I really liked it a lot. And then one day, it just stopped working. As they said, one day, it just stopped working. And I was going, wow, that's weird. I don't know if I've ever had a camera just stop working, you know, for no apparent reason. So, of course, that's playing in my head right now, right? I remember that conversation. I'm standing on this ridge. I put a fresh battery in. Nothing. No power at all. And all I can hear is Rob's voice saying, and it just stopped working. And I'm going, oh, no, this can't happen. This can't happen, not with this camera. It's a tough, for Pete's sake. So I said, okay, I'm not going to worry about it. Put it back in my little carrying bag that I had, my little baby shoulder bag. And went about and did the rest of my hike. And it was a great hike. On the other side of the ridge is the ocean, and there were whales going up the coast there. And so I got to watch, did a little whale watching. And even with a 600 millimeter lens, when they're not close to the coast, which they weren't today because there were no mamas with calves. Usually when mamas had calves, they'll usually hug the coastline a little closer. But I had none of those today. I must have had all teenagers out there or something. So they're out there pretty far, but I did get to see some fins, and I did get lots of, you know, where they're blowing, and saw the water spray coming up and, you know, was watching their movement. So it was still very fun. But the shots I have, even at 600 millimeters, are, see that little puff of spray there? That's a whale. And that's all it was. So it was more of an enjoyment thing than it was a photographic opportunity. So I get back to camp, and I was dying to know what was going on with my TG7. I got some good shots with the Lumix, but I was dying to know what was going on with TG7. So I remember this one battery pack that I have for my bike that, it's weird, it works great for like a week or so, but if I don't use it for a while, and I hadn't used the TG7 for a while, it decides not to work unless I plug it in. If I plug it in, then it comes to life and then it works fine again. And, you know, the charge is all there and all that kind of stuff. It's like it needs like an ER or something where you have to put the paddles on it and go, bring it back to life, jolt it back to life. So I thought, okay, I'm going to try that. I plug it into the battery pack and no little light comes on. You know, the little charging light doesn't come on. But I'm going, huh. So I went ahead and hit the power button, though, and it fired up. And it was like, oh, hi. How you doing? It's like nothing was wrong. And I'm going, that's nuts. I turned it off, but the power light didn't come on. So it wasn't charging the battery. And I'm going, this is really weird. I sat down and had something to drink. And I was just sort of thinking about it. I go, maybe it's the battery contacts or something. I unplug it from the Jackery. I open up the bottom and I look at the battery. The battery's seated in there fine. I pull it out. I'm looking at the contacts. They look fine. I look at the battery contacts. They look fine. But then I notice that the battery contacts are not lined up with the contacts in the camera. And I'm going, what the heck? Because almost every camera I have, you can't even put the battery in the wrong way. Guess what? With the TG7, you can put the battery in the wrong way and it still clicks in the spot. So basically, I had the second battery turned the wrong way. The first battery just died. I still don't know what happened with that. You know, I have it. In fact, I have it charging right now. You know, when I first put it in the charger, it was like, no, there's nothing here. So it's been charging for a while. Second battery was charged, but I put it in wrong up there on the top of the ridge. So I turned it around, put it in correctly. I'm doing it right now. I could probably hear it clicking. Put it in correctly, hit the power button, and everything was fine. So what a weird sequence of things. First of all, why did the first battery die? I still don't know the answer to that question. And second of all, you can put the battery in wrong on these TGs. And those of you with TGs probably have already figured that out. I never realized that. Maybe I just, you know, been more meticulous in the past and made sure things were lined up and never even tried to put it in wrong. But it will go in wrong. And if it goes in wrong, it's like the thing is dead. Mystery solved, or at least one of the two mysteries solved, and the thing has been fine ever since. Now, I did not get my comparison shot at the top of the ridge, so I still have to do that. And I still have to sort of analyze, you know, what's going on at the wider angle and all that stuff. But I still have time to do all of that stuff. At least my TG7 isn't dead. FZ300 did a great job on the camping trip, which is building my confidence with it. It still has a very good chance of being in my bag when I go to Costa Rica, the way things are going. Although I want to know what happens on the wide angle lens side of things. So that's still to be determined. Moral of the story is that even after all these years, even after having a TG1, a TG4, and now a TG7, you still learn things about your gear, and the way to learn things about your gear is to get out in the field and test it so that when you're on something important like a workshop or a bucket list trip, that this sort of stuff doesn't happen then and you miss the shot. By the way, one final note in addition to the moral of the story there. I was also testing bags because I got a couple new bags around the holidays because Think Tank was just blowing out some bags. I mean, 70% off. I may have talked about it on one of the podcasts. 70% off, and they're nice bags. One of them is a Retrospect backpack, which I just love that design that they do. 70% off. I had a couple of them, and I thought I knew which of those two bags I wanted to take on my summer trips. So that's the bag that I packed for the camping trip. And I got about halfway through the camping trip, was fumbling around with it too much, didn't have it, the grab handles weren't in the right spot. It just wasn't working for me. And I'm going, boy, I am so glad that I'm not in the middle of nowhere for a week or 10 days with this bag, because it's irritating me just after one day. I have another use for it. I keep an emergency bag in the ID4 for emergency, you know, extra clothes, toothbrush, all that kind of stuff. So it'll be fine for that. It'll be great for that because it just stays in the car. I don't have to lug it around. And then I switched to the other bag. I'm just carrying it around, just got it packed up, and I can already tell that I like it better, but I'm going to test that bag too on a short trip before it goes on anything long. Again, second moral of the story, test, 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 practice, practice, practice. We're in the time of year now where short trips make a lot of sense to make sure that we're ready for our long trips that come later in the season. I have some interesting camera industry news, and this first story dovetails nicely with what we've been talking about lately, and I'm kind of excited about it too. All right, here we go. This is on DP Review, and the headline is, could this be Panasonic's next compact camera? And they even have a picture of it. Of course, I have the link in the show notes. It seems like Panasonic may be working on a new compact camera, the TZ300. So we've been talking about the FZ300. This is the TZ300, and I think their TZ was another one of their more compact camera lines. It wasn't a bridge camera. So this looks like, you know, the LX body style. Reddit user Radeon26 posted a photo that appears to show the upcoming camera alongside a specs card that says it's a 20 megapixel type 1 sensor. 1-inch sensor, all right? Not the little guy, a 1-inch sensor. With a 24 to 360 millimeter equivalent f3.3 to 6.4 lens and a macro mode for taking pictures of subjects as close as 3 centimeters, 1.2 inches away. Very professional looking and super compact. The lens sticks out from the body when it's closed only about, oh my gosh, maybe a half an inch. I think it looks less than a half an inch. It's pretty darn compact. I mean, it'll fit in a pants pocket. All right, here we go. The image came from a now private video from a Polish creator, which we were able to watch before it was pulled. It appeared to show an official Panasonic event where the rest of the company's Linux lineup, as well as other electronics, were being shown off. While we weren't able to get more information from the video than what's visible in the screenshot, we can probably do some informed speculation given the camera's name and design implying that it's a follow-up to the Lumix DC ZS200/TZ200 from 2018. That camera had the same sensor and lens specs, though it is equipped with a micro USB port. It could be that, as with the Lumix DC ZS99 from last year, the company is releasing a mild update to the camera, adding USB-C, which would be fantastic, especially for charging. The one thing we wouldn't like to see repeated from the ZS99 refresh is the loss of the EVF, though the video being taken down makes it hard to scrub through frame by frame of any hint of one on the TZ300. But given the sticker next to the camera says embargo date 24 March 2026, it seems like we won't have to wait long before there's an official announcement. 24 to 360 millimeter fits in your pocket with a 1-inch sensor. It'll be interesting to see with this camera what updates are included. USB-C, of course. We would love to see some sort of EVF, although I can't tell from looking at the camera, can't see the back of it. It does look like, though, I get a hint of the LCD, and it does look like that the LCD is articulating, which is also super important. More to be revealed on this. We won't have to wait long because maybe even by the time you listen to the podcast, that announcement will be made. Here's an article on Petapixel with a link in the notes. Despite the compact camera boom, Canon is approaching re-entry cautiously. And so this is kind of interesting. I've been following what Canon may or may not do in this space. And before I even start reading any of the article here, I will say that Canon is one of the more conservative camera companies. They really like to watch and see and think about what's going on before they do stuff. Apparently, that strategy has served them very well, right? Because they just do great and they put out great cameras when they decide to. Let's see what they're thinking right now. The compact camera is white hot right now. Compact camera sales more than doubled in Japan in 2025, and many of the best-selling cameras last year at MAP Camera, a major Japanese photo retailer, were compact models. Canon is no stranger to compact camera success and is committed to giving people what they want. However, when it comes to new compact cameras, Canon has been pretty quiet in recent years, even while the popularity of compact cameras resurged. The company released a new PowerShot F360 HSA, which didn't make any meaningful improvements. More recently, to celebrate the PowerShot brand's impressive 30th anniversary, Canon unveiled a limited anniversary edition of the PowerShot G7X Mark III. It will be a highly coveted collector's item, but is just a visually distinct version of a camera from July 2019. Then there's 2025's PowerShot V1, which is not only an impressive vlogging-focused compact camera that gives the competition a run for its money, but it's also perhaps the best indication of how Canon views the future of the compact camera market. As Canon explained to Petapixel at CP Plus, it recognizes the growing demand for compact cameras, including all new ones. Quote, "The fixed-lens camera market is much more invigorated thanks to the boom in video shooting and also thanks to the support from young people," says an executive officer from Imaging Business Operations. "Image rendering that cannot be done by a smartphone, we consider that this is totally a new need from when fixed-lens cameras had their peak in the past, because the current young people have started to cherish and understand the value of what they cannot achieve through smartphones. So we expect that this market will grow even further," they continue. "There are differences in preferences among young people, particularly between potential users and existing ones. Specifically, the key difference is whether they find joy in owning a camera or simply in using one. We believe that the young potential users put importance on experience. That's one of the things we are keeping in mind when developing new products right now." However, Canon doesn't foresee the compact camera market ever reaching its past heights. We're back to quote again. "We are currently considering what are going to be the succeeding models after this as well. So please keep an eye out for what's coming next." Okay, now back to Petapixel. The booming compact camera market is not solely about nostalgia, about having a slightly better photo and video quality than a smartphone. It's also about having a fun-to-use camera that captures nice photos. People enjoy taking photos, so the act of taking pictures itself should be enjoyable. This is an area where modern, well-designed compact camera can make some serious noise. I mean, I think this is very Canon, and so they'll not reveal anything. They're saying, "Yeah, we're interested, we're looking at it." And then we'll find out what they're actually going to do. We'll see if anything comes of it. Now, You could own one of these stunning prints from the world's best photographers, bargain prices for 1 week only. This is an article on amateurphotographer.com. I have the link in the show notes, and they have the links to everything else. Yep, it's a square print sale from Magnum, and it includes work by more than 100 photographers, including some massive names. Let me read you what they have to say. If you've listened to this podcast in the past, you know I love the square print sale. I have four of them right now because I got a new one last year, one by Dennis Stock, a portrait of James Dean that I just love that shot. I look at it every day. All right, let me read you what they're saying here. Offered in conjunction with the Photographer's Gallery, prints for sale this year, square print sale, named Odyssey, are from a wide range of photographic artists, including some incredible legendary names. That includes Martin Parr, Eve Arnold, Steve McCurry, Juno Calypso, and many more. The sale is titled Odyssey because it's supposed to represent a search for meaning, a crossing of thresholds, and a story of growth and resilience. The theme has been selected to reflect Magnum's diversity over its 80-year commitment to independent photographic work, according to the agency. More than 100 signed or estate-stamped museum-quality 6x6 prints will be available to buy online for 1 week only, with prices starting at $110. The sale ends on Sunday, March 29th, after which the prints will no longer be available to buy. The director of the Photographer's Gallery says it opens up opportunities for more people to own exceptional photography and be inspired by its power to move us, inspire us, to bring us together. We are excited about the photographers whose work we are showcasing, many of whom are long-standing partners of the Photographer's Gallery. As a charity, every sale would support the work that we do here at the gallery. All right, so then in the article itself on Amateur Photographer, they have some of the samples. But what I did, of course, is I have to make sure that these things are accurate. So I went over to the Magnum site and I just started browsing through them. And there are some terrific shots in here. There's a portrait of Marilyn Monroe by Eve Arnold. It's a color shot and it looks really fantastic. The color rendering looks very Kodachrome. It's absolutely beautiful shot. All sorts of good stuff in here as I'm scrolling through it. Lots of good black and white. A lot of the photographers have signed them. I have both signed and estate stamped. They're both fantastic. Another shot that I saw in here that I really like is by Steve McCurry, and this one is signed. So a signed print by Steve McCurry, and it is looks like a miner that just come out of the mine, and he's smoking a cigarette, but it has a very Steve McCurry look to it. It's a beautiful image, and the color again has that. It's a little cooler than standard Kodachrome, so it could be Kodachrome where they let the white balance, tilt a little cooler, like it was in the shade or something. But it's a great looking shot. Of this bunch, that might be one that I would consider buying, but there's all sorts of really good stuff in here. So anyway, this sale is through Sunday. I'm going to just say one thing about the price. You can get the print itself for $110. If you have them frame it for you, which they do a very nice job of, then the price, I think, goes up. It can be as much as $300, depending. If you want just to receive the whole kit and caboodle all put together. So it's sort of up to you, but you can get the prints for $110 and then go ahead and frame them yourself, or just have them do the whole thing. I've done both. Last time on the James Dean portrait that I got, I had them do it, and it was nice because you open up the box and you just put it on the wall and you go, "Ah, I own this." Lots of fun. Good stuff indeed. All right, let's take care of a little Virtual Camera Club news. I want to start out talking about our Creative Camera Techniques workshop that's coming up. It's going to be here in April, and a whole bunch of you are signed up for it. Many of you listening to the podcast are signed up for it. And I just wanted to let you know that this week I'm going to start you know, getting that whole thing organized, getting the site updated. You'll be getting notifications in the mail, a little heads up on what we're going to be doing. So those embers are glowing, and I'm going to make them glow a bit more and maybe even get a little flame going here. And I'm really looking forward to that workshop. It's going to be a blast. Of course, there's still open seats for it because I'm not putting a limit on that particular workshop. So it's on our workshops page. And also I want to mention that part of the reason why that workshop's doing so well is because it's filled with Inner Circle Bold members. This was the workshop that they could attend for free by signing up as an Inner Circle Bold member. We're going to do the same thing next workshop season. So if you enjoy the discounts, if you enjoy hanging out with other members, Inner Circle Bold will also get you a free online workshop in addition to all the other benefits, the discounts and all that stuff. Just something to keep in mind if you want to be active with this very affable and intelligent photography community. They're really great to hang out with, and the online workshops are a blast. And finally, I'd like to give a nod to our friends at Red River Paper, longest running sponsor of the Digital Story. So I've done some prints from the FZ300. And as I guessed, the prints look great. Now, I've started out doing 8x10s to sort of decide I'm going to live with them, sort of decide which ones I want to print up. My favorite size is 11x14. So I'll probably pick a couple of my favorites and do 11x14s. But they're looking really good. The whole discussion about compact cameras for us is a little different than, let's say, the discussion that happens around the Gen Z community, because these small sensors are now workable for us because of the great software that we have available to us, you know, in post-production, where we can work with those small sensor images and basically do what we want with them. It's a fantastic feeling. I love doing it. And that also applies to after that work, we can make great prints from them. And when it's time to make great prints from them, that's when you want to click on the Red River paper tile that's on all the pages of the Digital Story. Nose around a bit, get some good paper, do a sample pack. If you're not sure what you want, they have a number of sample packs that are available, and that'll allow you to test different surfaces and then make some beautiful prints regardless of which camera you have. Or even if you're pulling up old RAW files from a decade ago and reprocessing them with some of the great new software that's available, then make some prints, complete the circle. You'll be so satisfied that you did. And a big thanks to Red River Paper for sponsoring this podcast. All right, it's going to do it for me this week. I hope you enjoyed the show. Working on more interesting stuff for next week. Until then, get out there, take some pictures, stay safe. See you next Tuesday. Bye-bye.